like a hippo or something like that, or even like an elephant, which they would have been able to see in biblical times. And one of the things that gets confused is they say it basically it had a part of its body that swung like a cedar tree. And they say that sounds like a dinosaur tail, like a huge thing that's like a tree. And modern scholars say, we're actually pretty sure they were describing a giant animal penis. So, episode two of Brushes and Keys.
Yes. Hello, everyone. This is Angela Bermudez.
Oh, we have to say our name every time. I guess I'm Austin
If
Wintry.
you don't care, I'll say it every time. I don't mind.
No, I guess that's normal.
Yeah, we don't know if they're gonna come, later in the episodes and they
Oh,
don't
and
know.
miss the plot? You can't just start halfway through. You don't
Well,
start Stranger Things in season three.
yeah, but I start other stuff halfway.
These are carefully written plot lines that go episode to episode. And if you get out of order, you're screwed. We're not like old school TV.
As you wish. I think it's polite to present ourselves.
No, you're right. And I will not be guilty of not being polite. With that said, something that I like very much as a general aspiration with this is to not make every episode heavy and philosophical. And so, do you want to introduce the topic of discussion this time?
Animals. We're gonna talk about animals today.
You know, it's funny. When you first proposed this, my mind went to pets and like there's some famous stories of composers and pets and that kind of
I
thing.
love that.
But
Yes. It's all about animals anyway. It don't
well, but
matter.
just now hearing you say it gave me a fresh thought, which was because I was thinking about music before, but the idea of artists depicting pets. I'm pretty sure some of the very oldest like cave paintings and things of humans are of animals, like tens of thousands of years old, you know, prehistory, pre-language, pre-civilization. And the reason I thought of it just now is that one of my weird pet fascinations are with young earth creationists, the people that believe that the biblical genealogy taken literally suggests that the earth and in fact all of the universe is between 6 and 10,000 years old, and that things like the idea of the earth existing for billions of years or millions of years, the idea that there were dinosaurs that died 65 million years ago, that's all a hoax, basically. It's all lies, they think. And that it's all, or at best, it's misunderstood. And one of the things that's always a really easy counter to that is humans have depicted the animals around themselves for the whole history of humanity, and there aren't cave paintings of dinosaurs. So
Yes, true.
that alone, there's no human who attempted to depict these animals that they would have. There's just they've the humans have done it for every other animal that they've seen. There's drawings and paintings of what we witnessed, and I always thought that like never mind all the scientific data, just the fact that there aren't cave paintings of dinosaurs should raise an eyebrow for anybody that thinks, yes, in fact, we lived alongside dinosaurs and it was only 5,000 years ago when like the Egyptians were building the pyramids and things were
So,
clearly.
what does that make you feel? I'm very curious since you're a big believer of those creatures.
Well, I think it's ridiculous. I mean, it's it, it, it it's it, I mean, part of me kind of wishes it were true because I love dinosaurs. I think they're endlessly fascinating. It's crazy to think how different the world was at one point, 100 million years plus or minus ago, where something that's so unlike life today completely ruled the planet. I mean, the whole planet was covered in these creatures. And they were just so beyond anything we had. You know, the biggest animals we have today were like normal sized for back then. And the environment was so different. Obviously, the continents were all in completely different places. The world was just so different. And so it feels like it may as well be a different planet entirely. And the idea that...
You know, I think in a way to lower your eyebrow a little, back then, we didn't have any artists around, so that was a little bit later.
I would like that would be the creationist counter-argument, you mean?
Yes. I would like to believe that, that they just didn't think of portraying anything back then.
I mean, that's... I don't know actually what the... I don't know what the biblically supported first artist concept is, because even Adam and Eve are portrayed as essentially fully intelligent, normal humans. They're not like proto-humans, the way our so-called caveman ancestors were kind of human but not fully developed in a, you know, depending on which species you're looking at. Neanderthals, increasingly, it sounds like they think we're just as intelligent as humans and basically just got bred into extinction, but they weren't actually a lesser... We sometimes use Neanderthal as like a term to suggest like a sort of barbaric subhuman, but they apparently weren't particularly. But in any case, yeah, that would be a funny argument to make. Like, oh yeah, no, they were there. They just... artists didn't think
they just
to
didn't,
do it.
Yeah, they didn't think of, you know, they didn't solve...
It's a very weak... it's a very weak defense, you know, to just kind of like make assumptions about those people.
Yeah, they were busy trying to survive. There was no time to go make drawings on the walls.
How amazing is that, though, that that actually is... If you go into the real world, those cave paintings, that was the state of reality for human beings back in those times. Like, you, the moment you were born, it was a very difficult struggle for survival. And, you know, hunting, gathering food, trying to keep warm. There was no society. There was no division of labor to the degree that civilization allows, where you have, like, a farmer who trades food for... a person who makes clothes. All the things that civilization developed were largely non-existent with like pre-civilization humans, in the same way that, you know, there's very basic division of labor when you look at like chimpanzees and things like that. You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, the mothers will tend to take care of the young, the, you know, until the young can fend for themselves, and then more or less the females are tasked immediately with making more young.
Right.
And the males are providing for the food. That's a gross generalization, but it's more or less true. So it's like, it's subsistence living. And the fact that even under those conditions, humans still started to make art almost immediately is an interesting statement about our brains and our creativity from before there was even language.
People say that the first painting ever, you know, like the first... figurative painting ever made in history was an animal, and we can see a lot of, like, you remember, you know, like seeing bisons and like horses and the tiny stick figures, you know, the people running around with them. I would like to think that that was mostly, it was not recreational, but it was like instructions for the future generations.
I'm not sure. This would be a good question for someone like Alice Roberts.
I'm not a very good source of information right now.
Well, because I think music, for example, predates language as well. And we almost certainly were singing before we were speaking. And the implication is that music, the musical branch of art, was used for like ceremony and ritual. You can imagine things like funerals. You know, some animals bury their young bury their dead. I mean, and so funeral, as the human intelligence starts to really develop, the idea of honoring the dead, or burying the dead, and mourning the dead, and building rituals associated with that, even before language exists, makes sense as a thing that music would start to kind of tumble out of. Also, music as a practical way to communicate, horn calls and things during hunts, that sort of thing. These are all various hypotheses that paleoanthropologists have made. And my assumption would be that art started under similar. It wasn't about teaching. This is purely my guess. Because teaching is a pretty high-level thought process, like leaving instructions. That feels very advanced compared to the idea of symbolic drawings that symbolize a ritual. Or even there's something very beautiful. I can't remember where I heard this, but there's something about this idea of that early glimpse of humanity being about just saying, I was here, which was like a new concept. Mm-hmm. That humanity, most animals just live in the moment and they don't think outside themselves. And that the first artist was somebody to be like, I can communicate to a stranger that I was here. Right. They wouldn't have had that thought that specifically, but just they're making their mark. They're creating a thing that they then walk away from. Yeah.
You know, you did that when you visited Costa Rica in my exhibition. You remember signing the wall? Austin was here.
Yeah, I remember also one of the orchestras, I believe it was the West Michigan Symphony, that I have worked with several times, and conductor Scott Speck. They have these sound walls behind the orchestra. So that, you know, if the orchestra is small for a Mozart performance where you maybe only have 30 musicians, they can move these walls and it bends so that, you know, the stage is kind of hugging the musicians and it focuses the sound outward at the musician, at the audience. And if you have a huge orchestra, you can pull those walls back. And they're basically just big moving panels mm-hmm. that you can slide like on wheels. They're huge, mm-hmm. they're, you know, the whole length of the stage. But on the back, they always have guests sign it. So the whole backside of it backstage is covered in signatures of like guest conductors, guest, you know, cellists, soloists, all that kind of thing.
That's fun. I remember we were watching some like Disney, the cruise or like famous people have a signature behind. Do you remember watching that?
Can't remember what that feels like. It would have been in a Movies That Made Us.
Right. Uh-huh.
But I can't, like, pierce the fog.
Yeah, no, okay, never mind. I can cut this.
Psh, no.
I will.
Never. one of the things, so on the veering out of prehistory to the modern times, though, one of the things that I loved that you did, I remember another artist, I think it was Greg Edmondson, the composer of Firefly / the Uncharted games. I believe his wife is a painter and has also done a thing kind of like this. But one of the things that you did that I loved was when Macha, your dog, got sick and needed medication and it was expensive.
Yeah.
You started painting people's pets as like essentially a super discounted painting, like a lot cheaper than a normal commission or anything. I always thought that was so charming, you know. There's something so sweet, and I know that people, I always think of Stephen Reedy, who a friend of ours, who commissioned one as a gift for a friend of his, and mm-hmm. like he texted me a photo of holding the painting and then the dog in the background and how excited.
Yes, that's the best moment. I got a couple of those photos, like with the pet posing next to the painting. That was very very good times, but also, you know, stressful times as well. She's still in medication, but now I am more, it's easier for me to afford that medication without making 100 paintings, you know?
Yeah, I feel like you haven't done one in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I loved it as a series, because one of the things that we talked about last time, which I imagine we'll talk about every time one way or the other. So art, the art world has like the pretentious types who have it in their mind that, you know, if it's not making some statement on society, and preferably a kind of revolutionary statement,
it's
all about tearing down the powers that be in all our utopian vision of a future society.
Oh my God! Yes. Do you remember when we went to this art museum or gallery? I think in Colorado or somewhere. I don't remember. And then we met with this woman. And
that was in Alabama.
We were in this art gallery just speaking.
It was an art museum.
Art museum.
It was a whole huge museum.
Yes, and I remember you kind of like mentioned something about decoration. You said the word decoration. She was like, anything, art is not for decorating. Art is in a statement, and
Yeah, I
she took
forgot
it a
that.
little bit personal, and it was a little bit rude. So from I remember that meeting was not great at all. She actually.
She was very dismissive of your work.
Yeah.
I was my music was being performed by an orchestra in that town, and they asked me to do an event before, like the night before, to speak to, audience members and talk about the piece and talk about my career. And orchestras do this all the time where they want to engage with the community, and particularly if they have like donors who give a lot of money to the orchestra, they like to have events to involve those people in the creative decisions and blah blah blah. So the conductor and I went and gave a speech and did like a Q&A together in the in this museum. And I remember I was walking around the museum and was like, wow, this place seems exciting. And I was like, it could be interesting to maybe build some kind of dialogos thing here or something. I wasn't sure what. It just felt like an exciting thing. And after I finished, and we were talking about, video game music and film music and what is it to be a composer in the 21st century? Because this is an orchestra that mostly plays classical music. And they were playing Journey, video game music from the last 10 years. And so it was a huge change of pace from Mozart and Beethoven and all that. So this woman who comes up to me and she says, "This was such a fascinating speech. I would love to get to know you more. I run this whole museum, blah blah blah." And she introduced herself and seemed so intrigued by the world of modern art as expressed through video games. And I thought, "Oh wow, great. Here's somebody that's really excited by the idea of what are artists doing today." So that's why when that orchestra was playing, more music, I called her up and said, "I'm bringing an artist with me, and we'd love to meet with you." And that's when she was a totally different person, and it was interesting because she doesn't know anything about music, at least certainly not video game music. So to her, it all seemed very interesting and very intriguing. But because she is, or at least feels she is, this very well-educated expert on art, it makes her extremely picky about visual art. So whereas the classical music community, it's exactly reversed. At least the classical music community, as it was when I was growing up, they would look at video game music and think, that's trash. That's not real art. Real art is operas and symphonies, and there's only a few composers that even know how to do that. Most of them are dead. But meanwhile, like if someone is doing light mapping on a building based on like stick figure drawings of cave paintings or whatever, they're like, that's genius modern art. And so everybody kind of is excited by the thing that they're not an expert in, and then when they become an expert, they become very pretentious in their taste and very and this was a quintessential, yeah, she was. And funny enough, do you remember the one thing of yours that she was really interested in and intrigued by?
Not I think my brain just shut off that day because I felt so shitty after that meeting.
She loved your cosplay.
Oh my God, I remember.
And she
Yeah,
was like
oh
trying to be
my
really.
God, oh my God, I just remember something else she said. She was like, you should stick with cosplay, you should keep modeling instead. And I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, it was a total disconnect. It was she felt like, and the reason you brought her up just now is so spot on, where she was basically like, art is it is a sacred task to put paintbrush to canvas. Like it is a rare and beautiful and almost religious act that must be seen with total solemnity and seriousness. And that the art needs to understand its place in history, and it can't be going backward, all these sorts of things. And it was one of those where I was like, I've heard all this before. I've heard all
Yeah,
this from
of course.
my classical music teachers. I remember I presented a piece, I was just telling John Macheri this week, or last week, whenever. I presented a piece of Danny Elfman's that he conducted in school. And I remember the teacher goes, It's not that music like this doesn't have a right to exist, but, oh my God. You know, do we need this? Like,
oh
that was her.
Oh, God.
She was extremely dismissive.
Wow.
And never mind the fact that she'd never written anything that anybody ever cared about, which I'm sure was true.
Yeah, I don't know why they get so bothered by others, you know, fun way to just create in life. It don't matter what medium or what's the result, you know, like I made a bunch of pet portraits, but that doesn't mean that they don't mean anything for the owners, you know. That's probably the most sacred piece they have at home.
You're perfectly paraphrasing perhaps the greatest monologue in all of cinema, which is Peter O'Toole playing food critic Anton Ego at the end of Ratatouille, where he says, I think I can get it exact. He says, in many ways, the life of a critic is very easy because we risk very little, but we hold power over those who would risk everything. But every critic must face the reality that the average piece of junk is worth more than our criticism designating it junk.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think of when I think of those pet. That's why I love those pet paintings. Is it's so easy. This is why I like that you weren't shaped by this academic environment, and so you don't have any of the kind of scars. Because I even still have, every now and again, I'll think, is this really good? And I'll catch myself because I got it drilled into me for years. And you're free of that, and I love that. And it was like, you have this ability to paint, and you can go in a very introspective place, and you can explore these ideas that are very personal and very meaningful. But you can also
phrasing it like it's all fun and games, but you know, there's a little bit of struggle also and self consciousness of not having that, you know, master degree in arts.
Sure. I meet composers all the time that don't have formal training that will say things like they just assume they missed out on, they don't even know what they're missing. They're like, I'm assuming there's a bunch of really important stuff that I just don't know. And a lot of times I look at them, I'm like, I listen to your music and it's quite excellent. I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, Danny Elfman didn't go to school, you know, Hans Zimmer mm-hmm. didn't. Like, oh, there's yeah. a lot of, so.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I get it, but point is, you creating those paintings of people's pets, you know, it gave you a chance to kind of have this free, you know, that they didn't take that long, and you knew it was special, like
yes.
from the beginning, you knew that the recipient was gonna love this, and that's
yes.
so rare. How often can you create a thing where you're not like panicked, are they gonna like it?
Yes, exactly. I made hedgehogs, I made horses and cats and dogs. I made a lot of different things, and it was all because of the meaning of the piece. Obviously, I felt, you know, more relaxed to have fun and not be so hard on myself and the techniques that I was using.
Yeah,
and they see that.
That.
They see the fun. They appreciate the piece at the end.
Yep. I think it's such a big, it's such an important reminder. We get so, you know, I mean, we have this kind of hero worship of artists as like these mythological creatures of like suffering and being tortured. You know, music has this in the form of, especially Beethoven above all, it's like famously the tortured soul, you know, composing, banging on the piano because his hearing was getting worse and worse and worse, and he was getting deaf, and so he had to play so loud.
Yeah.
As a pivot, I didn't do this on purpose, but since I mentioned Beethoven, there's a funny story regarding composers and pets, where Beethoven has this famous piece that's called Für Elise. That's the da na 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 piano
yeah.
piece. So the story was that he wrote that for a student of his, that her name wasn't even Elise. Her name, I think, was Teresa, but his handwriting was terrible and people mistook it as Elise. And he was in love with her. She was 20 years younger than him, and he was in love with her, and he proposed marriage and she rejected him.
Of course.
And he didn't, I don't think he took it very well. But But funny enough, she apparently had a dog, and he wrote a letter that was like, "Well, you know, the dog will come to me too." And he was apparently like resentful.
Of course.
They'd spent enough time together that he had really bonded with the dog and was like reminding her, you know, "You're missing out because the dog loves me."
My God, that is so and funny.
For all I know, that story is like it's been changed by history, and it was something much more mundane. But
oh my God, talking about things being changed by, you know, from mouth to mouth, I have a little game for you. I have for you a collection of depictions of animals in past centuries. I'm not gonna say which because they're from different eras, different years. But here's what I want you to do. I want you to tell me, what are you seeing? Obviously, for our listeners, I'll leave the link of the article so they can see each one.
That looks like it's probably from the pre-Renaissance.
It's a very old medieval, exactly. All these are a very old, kind of like 13, you know.
I'm assuming that's a bear, but based on the pose, even though it looks way more cat-like.
Yes.
But everything else about it strikes me as it was probably a bear.
You're correct. It is a bear. It's funny how the obviously without any of cameras, photography, any of that, people just have to base their pictures by what others saw. You know, I figured like somebody just found a bear and they were like, "Oh my God, you have to see this thing. It's like this and it has like big teeth or whatever." And it's just so funny how hilarious some of these are. Here's a second. What do you think of this?
It's like I started to say it feels like a squirrel, but its feet are webbed.
Yes.
So I guess maybe it's a beaver because of the tail.
Oh, yes, that's correct. I love the balls.
But it really looks more like a squirrel.
It's funny because, I don't know, it has six teeth, but also it's a male. Is
Nipolos?
That? I don't know if that's correct for males as well.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, you're right. That's interesting. It's like it had surgery. it had a C-section, and those are the scars.
Yeah, you're correct. It's a beaver. Here's the third one.
The tail looks like a beaver tail, but it also kind of just looks like a fish.
It's like a fish, yes.
Yeah, it looks like they just drew a fish alongside the back of like a capybara.
Yes, exactly.
But I'm assuming from the tail that it's a beaver.
Yes, you're correct. It's a beaver. Wow, you're very good at this.
Well, if it weren't for the tail, oh wow, Arabian Here's... or Egyptian land crocodile.
yeah.
I mean, look, if this is. Mm-hmm. This is like a super muscular looking lizard.
Honestly, it says a crocodile, yes, but it looks more like a Komodo dragon.
Right, Komodo dragon.
Mm-hmm.
It's also interesting how it looks like it has scales on its fingers and mm-hmm. on its tail and on its head and not the body.
The body is soft. It's like
the body is, yeah, or yeah, exactly, or like it's wearing a sweater.
yeah, I love how the leg, the how do you say it? Like the elbow of the other side is so like off.
Yeah, huge. I know. Yeah, the perspective is, and the back and
the back
left
even
leg.
Have
there's no foot.
It's like canvas when she lays down.
Yeah, exactly. It's amputee.
Yeah. What do you think this is?
So I'm seeing. It's like a. This looks like a mythological. Because it's like it has like a fire tail, and mm-hmm. it's biting a person.
Yes.
And it has spiky, ridged back,
mm-hmm.
like a stegosaurus kind of.
It does look like a cock. Yes, like a cock feet.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah, like bird, mm-hmm. bird feet basically.
But also, it has a vagina and a little micropenis.
You're right. Yes, it's an intersex animal. I haven't any clue. I mean, I kind of just thought maybe it's like a wolf or something, but I have no idea. That's quite the artist like liberties taken.
Can you just throw any guess?
I'll guess wolf.
Oh, okay. Well, this one, my friend, is a crocodile as well.
The fuck?
I believe this was like the first, I don't know, probably someone so drunk.
I bet it's actually what you said a second ago. Someone described this to somebody, yeah, and the exactly. description,
but
they
this,
didn't
the person
witness
that
it.
Described it, it was just so drunk that they just came with the ugliest demon. No,
either that or they don't even have to have been drunk, you know?
Why are they going to draw it with a vagina and a micropenis?
Well, that's not necessarily what that is.
It looks very much like it.
It does, but I don't know.
Yeah, well,
there's a famous in the Old Testament. There's the description of the Leviathan, which they always try to make in like Young Earth creationists define that as being a biblical description of a dinosaur because they think it's sort of a description of a giant lizard, like a dragon, basically.
Right. Uh-huh.
The modern interpretation of it is that it was most likely like some, you know, like a hippo or something like that, or even like an elephant, which they would have been able to see in biblical times. And one of the things that gets confused is they say it had a part of its body that swung like a cedar tree. And they say that sounds like a dinosaur tail, like a huge thing that's like a tree. And modern scholars say, we're actually pretty sure they were describing a giant animal penis.
Oh my God.
And it was just the nature of poetic language that people weren't being literal.
Yeah.
And that it definitely was not a dragon or a dinosaur. Yeah. And that's what makes me think these kinds of things, how that happens, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. Somebody tells a person who tells another person who tells another person
exactly.
who then tells the artist.
What are you seeing?
It, again, looks like some kind of lizard. It's by the water. It's next to some fish. It has the face, again, of rodent. It looks like a rat face.
It's the ears.
Everything about it, yeah, and the short nose, and
mm-hmm.
But again, it's got that lizard body, and so it's. I'm guessing it's either. Well, again, it looks European though, which so they wouldn't have seen like a Komodo dragon, for example. It's not crocodile again.
Yes, correct.
So ridiculous. Oh, that's so funny. So easy for us to laugh.
I know.
They were doing their pet. That was like a pet drawing for that for some.
Oh, my God. Lord. I love that.
This is like a Dr. Seuss.
yes.
What's going on with the nose? This is basically looks like a swordfish, but instead of a spear for a nose, it has like a Dr. Seuss style elephant trunk.
Yeah. Big teeth.
I genuinely have no clue. Well, the teeth maybe makes me think it's like a, what are they, a walrus?
You're not very far away. Well, actually, a little.
But it has fins and things like, mm-hmm. like a fish, like a.
There's definitely fin. It's definitely a water animal.
It could be a very very weirdly distorted manatee.
It's a hippopotamus.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
Hippos don't have these features.
Yeah, well, none of this.
I mean, it really is a fish.
It is. Oh,
that's so funny.
Yep.
All right, well, I failed that one.
Yeah, it's just so bizarre, I know.
Is this a pissing... it's like a dog or like a... What are those little cats like in The Lion King? Timon. Like a little meerkat from Africa. That's my guess officially. That's really what it looks like. Even though you just told me it's not.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's pissing on Mickey Mouse.
It does. It's a lynx. It's a cat.
A lynx.
You said cat-like, so I guess that's...
Yeah. No, I mean, it. Yeah, right. Yeah, it definitely has that. You see it. What the...
I know.
It's like a snail dog.
I know. What snail are you wolf? Seeing?
I'm going to guess that it's a fox, because foxes curl up super adorably.
Oh my god, you're so cute. But no, that's a snail.
No, it's not. It's a snail shell with like a fox inside.
That is what people thought a snail was in 1350.
Wow. It's amazing that something that old is that well preserved. That's 800. Well, not quite 800 years old, but still. That's just mind-blowing to me that, and we have art much older than that. That's got to be like a beetle or... I love the face.
I know. It's like a general, like a mat.
Yeah, or like an Easter Island head on its back.
Yeah.
It looks like... First off, it looks like a child's drawing because it's a beetle as if you're looking at it from above, but yet it's also on a landscape.
It's definitely not a beetle.
Well, then I have no clue.
Yeah, you can analyze the lines that are around it.
The, like, halo? Is that a spider web?
Yes!
So it's missing some legs.
It's missing some legs, yes.
Six legs is...
It was probably injured, you never know. But it does have the butthole.
For the web.
Yeah.
It's like an Aztec face. So we have a knight in chain link armor riding a horse and holding out like food or something, like fruit or something to, I'm guessing it's like a leopard or something. It has that sleek cat-like body, but again, mm-hmm. it has that almost mythical,
yes, kind of,
you know, like a griffin.
It is supposed to be a tiger.
Interesting. I actually really like this one. I really like the kind of cool, I assume, tree in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very
stylized. This one is definitely more elaborate, yes. This is from the 12th century.
Wow. Oh my. Well, it's clearly supposed to be like, it looks like a fish, except given the size, I'm going to say it's a whale.
Yay! Good job.
Because it's basically the size of a boat. It's much larger than the boat.
It's a duck-faced whale.
Yeah. And it also has those like sea creature from like the Black Lagoon style,
oh yeah,
you know, fins next to its face.
Mm-hmm.
That's obviously an elephant.
Yeah, this is a very sad elephant.
Giant, like, Puss in Boots eyes elephant.
But you know what? What is surprising? I don't see the big ears.
Yep. That's also an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
That one has like a serrated blade for a trunk.
But look at the ears.
You're right. It's like dog ears.
Uh-huh.
There's an owl.
Yes.
An owl with a very old man face, and it's also being like attacked by other birds.
Mm-hmm. Very bizarre. I wouldn't like to see this in my dreams.
That's more believably a snail.
Mm-mm.
It's like an angry bird.
Yeah. It's an oyster.
I don't think they have faces.
Well, they need to put some... You know?
Well, this is all adding to the argument that maybe humans did try to draw dinosaurs and they just were terrible.
Maybe?
couldn't accurately portray them.
Anyway, I have several more, but I think this is getting too long, so...
Oh, well, very good. I love it.
Yeah.
I would not have thought on a game of, like, medieval art depictions of animals and how... Sometimes it's so obvious what it is, even though it's inaccurate.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's... This is one of those things, by the way, that is so interesting about the way the human brain works, where you can look at a thing that, compared to a photograph, gets everything wrong. Everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And yet we have the capacity to understand the intent. That's why AI always struggles, where if you do like those CAPTCHA You know, those yes. CAPTCHA tests, those are training. The whole point of those CAPTCHAs mm-hmm. is beyond the security measure and like resisting bots. They're also training like machine learning on identifying images and teaching computers to be able to see the way humans do. And so it's so funny how some of those, like everything about it, but if you just think for a moment, you go, oh yeah, well, it's obviously a whale.
Mm-hmm.
Why else would they draw a fish of that size? But no AI could ever figure that out at yes. this current day. Like eventually, I'm sure, yes, but right now, no. So yeah, anyway, this is a fascinating yeah. Demonstration of how the human mind can work. It's so I think it's so cool.
Absolutely. We should next time we should play the game of, you know, giving the weakest pitch of a movie and you guess which movie it is.
Oh yeah, Richard Kraft has done that game before and he's so good at it. Like coming up with just the stupidest descriptions of a movie you're like, that sounds like the worst movie ever made. And then you realize it's like
genius. Yes, it's
like Schindler's List he's talking about.
Exactly. You know? Oh, man. Yeah. Let's do that next time.
Well, yeah. So do you have any pet peeves or delights?
You know, I have so many pet peeves that we should...
Well, pick one.
We should talk about... Actually, for delights, I was gonna mention how people actually care so much about their pet that just decide to have a piece of art that commemorate the love they have for them. So I guess my delight would be like, I don't know, all of the relationships with pets is just like I'm a softie and I love when people love them so much.
Well, yeah, like the Instagram accounts where the dog becomes famous because it's just so adorable or so silly or so whatever.
Yeah, I know. I had to open one Instagram account for Canvas because she's just like, I can't stop taking pictures of her. She's so funny and she has so many expressions and it's just... I don't know. It's like it's not that I'm a crazy dog woman, but it's so funny how they can actually heal so much with just being there.
I remember my friend Amin, who is a filmmaker, has always been a huge dog lover and had two dogs for a long time named Cello and Oboe. And I remember him saying something like that once that always stuck with me, where he had like a really stressful day. Like he was trying to make a project, like get greenlit. They were trying to raise money or something. Can't remember what happened, but it was like it all exploded and the thing wasn't going to be, the movie wasn't going to get made or whatever. And he put all this work into it or it was something like that. I don't remember. It was really, he had a crap day. And he came home, and Cello and Oboe were like, hi, la, 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 so excited to see him. And he had just this moment of realizing, like, no amount of my stress will ever, like, reach them. That they will just always be happy to see me. And, like, and it made it so easy to just let go of the stress because, you know, you just... give them the love right back and they give you more and then you give them more and it becomes a cycle and very quickly you're like, what was I so stressed about again? Like,
yeah.
No, they have no, you know, like it's a very idealist and almost naive way of looking at it and to be like, they have no care in the world, which is true, but that can be very healing and very cathartic because they're just so unconditionally there for you.
Yes, I know.
Dogs in particular, of course. I always think cats have an unfair reputation as not caring about their owners because I've had very sweet cats in my life.
I think cats are a big wide range of personalities. They can be assholes as they are known for, but there are also
dogs too though. Some dogs are such like vicious.
I only put chihuahuas in that category. You can't just put all of the dogs there.
No, but even look at Canvas, how she's super weird around strangers. Like, she's not scary, but she's very shy.
She's very shy, and that's very sweet. That's not being an asshole.
But I'm simply saying there is a wide gamut of personalities in dogs, too.
Oh, absolutely.
I think the problem
yes.
with cats...
But cats are mostly known by being assholes. No, they're not.
That's
cases.
Your projection.
No, it's not.
That's your projection. But I do think that people buy cats with the idea of it being like interactive furniture. They want it to be a thing that mostly is in the background that occasionally they'll pet and feed. But what I found in my life is that if you treat the cat the same way you treat the dog, they treat you back the same way. They're really affectionate. They cuddle with you.
Why will
they
you treat walk... a cat when you can treat a dog? Why will you treat a cat like a dog when you can?
You're awful. That's so funny. I think it's true. I think statistically we think of cats like that, not because cats are like that, but because that's how people treat them, because that's why they want a cat. They don't
right.
want to be so attentive. They don't have the time or whatever.
That's true. They have a fame of being low maintenance.
Yeah, yeah. But if you treat them the same way you treat the dog, they react, you know? My cat growing up, I had him for 18 years.
He would
come and sleep on my chest every single night. If it was like 11 at night and I just kind of was like at my door, anywhere in the house, he would come from wherever he is and come get in bed.
Oh, that's
you know,
so
like,
sweet.
It was awesome. It was so, and then as he got older, the bed was too high for him to jump. So I would pull my desk chair next to the bed so he had a step he could reach.
That's so sweet.
He was too weak to jump.
Aww.
And so hearing me move the chair was like the signal to him.
Nice.
I didn't have to call him. He would just hear the chair move.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. So that's what I mean. Like, because we treated him
that's
so.
That's true. By the way,
to sit
for
on
the
my
record,
dad's.
I don't hate cats. I just, you know, I'm into dogs. That's all. But I love them. I think they're so cool and beautiful. I wish I could have one, but Austin don't let me. So.
That same cat growing up used to. My dad had really wide shoulders. He was a big guy, and so the cat would sit across the back of his shoulders and just sit there for hours. And my dad would reach up and scratch him like this. And the cat would get into such a trance that he'd start drooling.
It's like us.
And my dad would have drool all over his shoulder from the cat's head right here. It would be just so wet. It was so nasty, but it was so funny. The cat was just...
It's exactly like us, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's so true.
I guess you're jealous. That's why you don't want me to have a cat. You want to be...
Oh, I know. I already have to compete with Canvas.
I was going to say, yes, that's one of my delights when people love their pet, like when they respect them, when they actually treat them like what they are, like creatures, like living creatures that give you love and positive energy. But I guess one of the pets, and because this is so fresh in my mind, I've been walking Canvas since, you know, I got her and I get to interact with a lot of different people on the streets, and every time I see somebody reaching, you know, going to our direction, and you know, Canvas gets super excited. She wants to meet them all. She wants to smell and be friends with everybody. When somebody takes their dog and lift them up, that bothers me so much. Like, immediately, I hate them.
Or if they cross the street.
I can't stand them because, look, nothing is going to go weird. Like, Canvas is not going to attack them. Obviously, I know they don't know that, but she's not on a leash. And she's fucking smiling the entire time. She's so happy that there's no way somebody's going to be like, holy shit, this dog is going to murder my dog.
No, but she's looks like a big husky, you know, like you're walking her on a chain. I could see somebody going, it's not worth the risk. All it takes is 1 second.
I know. But here's the thing. They are not letting their dog face the world outside. They don't let them interact. They don't let them have experiences. So I hate that. I dislike when they cross that line, you know. They are still pets, you know that?
I do think there probably is something to be said about an under-socialized dog will be weird. Will start to develop weird social behaviors, and they're not helping their dog by not
Absolutely not.
Letting it interact with others. I do think there probably is something to that. But I can forgive. If someone has a tiny enough dog that they can pick it up and carry it, Canvas looks... I mean, look, a big Doberman or something would look even scarier, or like a pit bull or something. But Canvas doesn't look like nothing. You know, she's like a wolf. And
but she's so happy, I get it. Smiley.
I mean, that is the irony, is she is very playful and very sweet mm-hmm. with other dogs. And sometimes she does play a little rough. Yeah. She doesn't realize that they're not her same size, it seems like.
Yeah.
And sometimes she kind of throws them around a little, but she's never bit. I've never seen her bite another dog or attack, or even when they're being rough with her, she might bark at them, but I've never seen her be violent even
absolutely
a little.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't, no one knows that. I mean, look, if you saw someone walking a big, scary looking dog towards her, you might feel a little nervous.
Of course.
Nervous.
And I've done it because, well, I did it because this guy was walking with this huge Rottweiler and it was not leashed. And I know that Canvas always want to be friends and all that, but I don't know if this dog is going to like that.
So there you go.
But it's unleashed. It's against the law. Come on.
Oh, you're such a good citizen.
Yeah, well, it's just common sense. It's not even the law. Anyway.
Well, so yes. There you go. Two for one. A pet peeve and a delight.
Yeah, I give you everything. That's I have true. Another suggestion, actually, like for to discuss. The album of the day.
Oh, I totally forgot.
You forgot, yeah. Well, the album of the day is going to be, guess what? Animals.
So it's funny, you mentioned the album and I never remember names. I'm terrible at remembering like song names and album names. I forget my own track names. Like I it's just one of those that I remember music far better than the name. I forget the artists' names. Obviously I don't forget Pink Floyd, but so I couldn't remember if I knew that album or not. And I went and looked it up, and actually I was like, there's a lot of songs on here that I may not have heard. I don't think it's their biggest album, but I did read a little bit about it to kind of see if it refreshed any memories. And it is so funny to me that this is an album, as you mentioned, that they wrote in response to, like, as a critique of capitalism.
Yes.
By making it almost like a concept album that sort of recreates George Orwell's Animal Farm. But here's the thing that's
exactly.
hilarious to me. They completely flip the point of Animal Farm. It's 100% backwards of Animal Farm. Animal Farm is a criticism of Stalinist communism. You know, the whole idea that all animals are created equal, but some are more equal than others is a line from Animal Farm. And like they create a hierarchy of you know, some animals' needs must be met by other animals. And it's like this Orwell was overtly criticizing the Stalinist sort of so-called egalitarian society that was being built, which was horribly oppressive. And I mean, never mind the fact that tens of millions of people died from famines and being thrown into gulags and things for being political dissidents. I mean, Stalinist Russia is arguably worse than Nazi Germany as like one of the worst places to have been alive in all of human history. And so George Orwell told that story through this lens. It's an amazing book. And then so it's so
that,
funny to
that,
me.
Is that one like in a like a school obligatory reading book?
Nowadays, probably not. But I read it as a kid on the recommendation of my dad. I don't think we had to read it in school.
Mm.
It's just very funny to me that, you know, capitalism is what, you know, is and was essentially the kind of main antithesis to communism. You know, if communism is predicated on an idea of sort of forced egalitarianism, capitalism is based on the idea that the world exists as a series of free markets where you have voluntary exchange between people. You make a painting for $100 and I want the painting more than my $100. So I give you the $100, you give me the painting, and now we both have something mm-hmm. we wanted yeah. more than the other. So we're both better off. I know that critics of capitalism will say it's not that simple and that it can be very predatory. And I'm not one to say, like, I don't consider myself an Ayn Randian style super like Puritan view, but I'm unapologetically a believer in free market capitalism insofar as what its philosophical underpinning is. So I find it ironic when in a world where, you know, like how much Soviet music do we cherish that was explicitly written as propaganda? All the famous Soviet music, like that of Shostakovich, as a very famous example, he was secretly finding ways to criticize them without them knowing because he hated them so much and he was essentially a prisoner in his own country. And the obvious example that everyone always goes to is, you know, as the automobile industries took off in the world, you know, American cars are what exploded and what the whole world wanted. Soviet cars, which were made by centralized production, were not only inferior in every way, but the rest of the world didn't want them, and they're all forgotten now. You know, it was Chevrolet and Ford that were making mm-hmm. all the cars that people wanted. And I know I will receive crap for what is considered a rosy colored. That I will immediately be told that factory conditions were terrible in auto plants, and this was the need of unionization and all that. And I don't disagree with any of that, but I think the fundamental premise is still a better one because it says you don't have to work here, and if you do, I'm going to pay you for your labor. That's a fundamentally different thing from the way full-on Stalinist communism works, which was, you know, well, I won't start making historical claims, but the point is, I think it's hilarious that, you know, a British band is critiquing capitalism by making an album that they're going to go sell on the free market, which then, of course, sold well. They made millions of dollars from.
But what you don't know is that they felt very uncomfortable about it. And actually, there were a few issues with it. But I have to do some research.
Well, I did read that they were the record label basically wanted the album sooner. If I remember correctly, the record label wanted the album sooner than they were willing to do it. So they basically broke out of their contract and bought a building that they then spent a year building their own recording studio in and recorded the album in there. All of those are such capitalist behaviors that to then use the album to critique capitalism, and also to make the story the reverse of what happens in Animal Farm.
It's kind of like interesting because there are four tracks. Well, one split in half. But their tracks, yes, they're like you can see, right? It's like one called Pigs in the Wig, Dogs, Pigs, Sheep. Pigs are a depiction of obviously the rich and lawmakers, you know, people. Mm-hmm. The dogs are the law enforcers and businessmen. And the sheep are the common folk, you know, just trying to get by. But seems like the last track, it's kind of like an acceptance of the capitalism.
Well, I thought, isn't it that they like rise up and basically, you know, kill the upper class? Isn't that essentially the depiction of what's happening at the end?
The first track in the fifth one was basically inspired by the wife. It's like a love song. The first one is like basically, what could be my life without you? It's a very soft romantic song that kind of like introduce this whole mess in between. And the fifth one, it's like back to the wife, a love song, how life is going with you and how not shitty it is besides all this fucking mess and, you know, dystopian world that we live in. Mm-hmm. It's not entirely like a criticism. It is, but it's mostly like, well, you know, life is crap, but at least we can actually change a little bit of it with love.
Yeah, well, there's that is a recurring sentiment in critiques that capitalism is seen as soulless. It's like just work until you die. And I'm like, that's true for all of human history. That was always the case. At least capitalism lets you work on something that you probably want to work on, or at least gives you options. And again, I know I will be portrayed by some comment somewhere as being some like Ayn Randian objectivist. I'm not. No system is perfect. But to me, I think about capitalism the way Winston Churchill thought about democracy, where he said it's the worst form of government other than all the others.
You don't have to put yourself in the spot if you don't want to.
No. Here's what I read. It says, according to Wikipedia, the album is a critique of capitalism, but differs from Animal Farm in that the sheep rise up and overpower the dogs, which is not what happens at the end of Animal Farm. The pigs create like a brutal rule of law, and they abolish things that, because the whole point is that the animals rise up to drive out the farmers. And they say, we the commoners are going to control things. And then the pigs are like, well, we're the smartest, so we have to plan things. So everybody has to work for us, basically. But we're all animals here. All animals are equal, that kind of thing. And then over time, the pigs, as the ruling class, eventually take total control and then abolish revolutionary thinking. And then the final scene in Animal Farm is they've built an alliance with the humans and the pigs and the people can't be seen different. They're indifferentiable from one another. They all look the same. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's a pig and what's a human. The point being that these kinds of governmental systems that concentrate power in the hands of the few means that even when it's a rise up, defend the people, whoever ends up with the power will always end up as a brutal monster.
Yep.
Because humans are animals. Bring it all home. We are our worst side can be really brutal, and we have a beautiful side and a peaceful side and an artful side, but we can be vicious, horrible animals to each other. And if you combine that with real power over others, nothing good will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what George Orwell was suggesting. And I think he was brilliant in doing so. And so often when I see artist types, especially successful rich artists,
I know.
That's
a pet peeve of yours, I guess.
It is, because I feel like, look, no system is perfect. All systems can probably be reformed. But it's very sexy and fashionable for artists to speak the language of revolution, not reform. And I say, reform, capitalism can be fine-tuned and improved, and we can find ways to be more fair, and we can find ways to catch the people that might, you know, slip between the cracks and be forgotten by society or easy to forget, you know, underprivileged people or marginalized people. Like, we should be improving our systems to make sure that we're helping those people, but in a way that still maximizes, you know, wealth creation for those who have something to offer. You know, as I think it was Walter Reed, or maybe I can't remember now who said it, but a famous economist said something along the lines of, up until modern capitalism, you became rich and powerful by taking from others and by preventing them. But the way you become rich and powerful under capitalism is by serving others. And you know, like Pink Floyd created an album that brought millions of people, they created many albums that brought millions of people happiness and real meaning in their life. They've served others. So in my mind, even while criticizing capitalism, they deserve that money. They deserve what they got. They didn't steal to do that.
Yep.
They didn't defraud people. So that's why I'm like, that's a beautiful demonstration of the system working.
Yeah.
Even as they criticize the system. I think it's great.
Yeah. Amazing.
Anywho. All right. Well, there you go. Here's our light episode about
about
animals.
Jesus, Austin, you take this so fucking...
I can't help it. I get excited.
I know. I love it. This is the kind of thing that I say, we should record this.
It's a good impulse.
But yeah, I'm so happy we're doing it. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. You know, I had a funny story about the cover as well. That's a picture.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a Photoshop. I always thought it was a Photoshop, like seeing the pig flying. And I didn't know that was like a real picture. They make this balloon and put it on top of that building. It's like a power station with the four chimneys that I think they represent the four members of the band.
I think that might be the building that they bought, that they recorded the album
in. Is that the... Oh, that's awesome. That I didn't know.
I could be wrong, but it says they bought a three-story block... A three-story block of church halls. So never mind. I'm wrong. In my mind, it was a factory, but I misread it.
I see.
I stand down.
Yeah,
that was their 10th studio album. Good Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, the pig went away. It kind of like just went loose.
Like it detached?
Yeah, detached, and it was flying all over the place, and it was like, you know, 2,000 feet a minute, and they took in a helicopter, and they couldn't catch it. And then at some point, someone called. I don't know how they did it. They just called, and they were like, "Did you lose a pig?" And they were like, "Yep." And it was like a farmer saying, "It's frightening my cows. Will you just come pick it up?"
How do you know how far away it had made it?
I have no idea. That was a little clip that I saw on YouTube from. It was like a piece of collection for the a gallery showing they had. So they had like clips of some of the stories, and
that's, you know, so funny.
And then the next day they had to put it again to take the picture finally.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Anyway, there you go.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, there you go. Episode 2. Success.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for being here, and see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you.